On January 2, 1678, a fleet of French ships sank in the Caribbean Sea, 100 miles off the coast of Venezuela. 1,200 sailors died, among them many pirates who were hired by the French to rout the Dutch out of the West Indies. This colossal shipwreck decimated the French Navy and also brought together among the survivors a small number of fierce and ambitious pirate captains, whose joint exploits brought on the golden age of piracy on the high seas. The story of this sunken armada is the subject of undersea explorer and treasure hunter Barry Clifford's new book, The Lost Fleet. Clifford is known for his 1984 discovery of the first authenticated pirate shipwreck, the Whydah, a former slave galley commandeered by the pirate captain Black Sam Bellamy, which sank off the coast of Cape Cod in 1717. I asked Barry Clifford to tell me about one of the pirate leaders who survived the French naval catastrophe, Lawrence de Graaf.
De Graaf is perhaps the most interesting of all the pirates to me because he started out in Holland as a slave, was sent to the Canary Islands, and from there he was put on a Spanish galleon and sent to the Caribbean to look for pirates, and he escaped. And from that moment on, he hated the Spanish and wreaked havoc on any Spanish vessel that he could capture. And he became the most successful pirate of all. What's most fascinating about him, and this is what interested me with the Whydah project as well, is that de Graaf was a former slave, and his history seemed to have been swept under the carpet by historians that, in fact, he was described as 6 foot tall, blonde-haired and blue-eyed when he was of African origin. And he was elected by a predominantly white crew as captain of a ship. The last thing that 17th and 18th century historians would want would to have a slave rebellion, to be writing about men like Lawrence de Graaf, because indeed, as what happened in Haiti, a slave rebellion could be devastating.
The way you describe him, he didn't sound like the typical Hollywood pirate. He sounded like a real man of honor.
He was a man of honor. And in fact, he, in many instances, emancipated slaves from slave towns. And after capturing ships, he gave captains leave to go ashore and treated his men quite well. And that's why he was elected, because he was the man to get the group through the day, whereas the Admiral d'Estrée was appointed to his position as admiral. And that's why I think he was despised by his men, because he was a terrible seaman and ended up destroying the whole French fleet. He had no right being the admiral of the fleet whatsoever. That was just the way in French society at that time that you could be appointed admiral of a fleet. Whereas if you were a pirate and you earned the rank of captain, you were elected.
How were the pirates organized on the ship? They elected their captains. Did they also vote on what city they were going to sack next or what ship they were going to attack?
Everything was voted on. And when four or five pirate captains got together, it was the essence of democracy because they had to agree before they took a step forward. So these must have been fascinating meetings, people like Thomas Paine, Captain Kidd, Degremond, and de Graaf trying to decide on what town to sack next and what to do with the prisoners and if to release slaves and if to sell slaves. And I suppose this is the essence of that period was that once these men infiltrated back into colonial America, and the stories and of their success, you know, what effect did that have on colonial America?
Did pirates battle it out with men of war ships on the high seas like we see in movies?
No, indeed they did. And in many cases, I think that they were avoided, that the pirates were a formidable group. You know, they were obviously fighting for their freedom, whereas, you know, a sailor on a Spanish merchant ship or on a Spanish man of war, they didn't quite have the same thing to fight for. So all of the records indicate that indeed, all the way back to the Elizabethan pirates, that they were an extremely formidable force. And what kept them from really dominating the entire region was that they were free spirits. That was tough. You know, the different captains had different ideas. They went their separate ways. But on the times that they were able to come together and raids on places like Campeche and Caracas and Maracaibo, they were devastatingly effective.
I thought they got most of their treasure by sacking cities, by getting off the ship and invading cities on the coast.
Well, you know, in the early 17th century, indeed, the cities were their main targets. Places, as I said, Maracaibo and Veracruz were easy places for them to study and attack, whereas the Spanish treasure fleets would, you know, were very careful about when and they would leave and how they would leave, and they would obviously have great armadas with them. It wasn't as easy for them at this period in time to attack ships, and it was much easier to attack a city. And in many instances, we see were very, very few pirates. For instance, on the attack of Caracas, there were 47 pirates attacked a garrison of over 2,000 Spanish, and the Spanish ended up running. So when
How did they do that? They just look so scary with the eye patch and the cutlasses? I mean, what was their magic weapon?
I think they were scary. I think they were really scary. I think there was real reason to be afraid of these men. And, you know, these were the same people who went into the Canadian wilderness. They were frontiersmen who learned to shoot very accurately. And, you know, the last thing that they wanted was to end up in a Spanish jail or in a Spanish galley like Lawrence de Graff did. So, and I think that, you know, it was an outlaw subculture. There's no question about that. But these men were free. And I think once they found that they fought very hard to preserve that freedom. When, for example, the ship that I located on Cape Cod, the Whydah, that was a Royal African slave ship. That company was licensed to buy and sell people. A third of the crew of the Whydah, you know, after they captured the Whydah, were former slaves. And so looking back in history, one has to take a close look at the human element here. You know, you're a slave, you escape, where can you go? There was only one place, and that was piracy. And indeed, from our studies, what we believe is that a third of the participants in this period, again known as the Golden Age of Piracy, were men of African origin, escaped slaves.
I thought it was interesting in your book that you write that there are really not many instances in which pirates made people walk the plank, but there is evidence of one instance, and these pirates did it because they read about it in a book.
That's correct, but there's very little evidence. I mean, there were a few homicidal maniacs that seemed to have, you know, given pirates like Lawrence de Graff a bad name. But in most instances, when a pirate ship approached another vessel, the merchant vessel didn't want to put up a fight because they were afraid what would happen after that. You know, that they would, you know, that they may end up walking the plank. But when a pirate ship did capture a merchant ship, they gave the merchantmen a chance to join the pirates, and many of them did.
I read in your book that many of the coins that you find have a strike down the middle, as if they were going to be divided in half. What's that all about?
Well, what they would do on the coins that we found from the Whydah, and actually an elderly woman showed me these coins before I had found it several years ago. Her grandfather had claimed to have found them on the beach. But each of the gold coins had a slice in the middle of them. And later, when I found the pirate ship Whydah, we found several gold coins with that same slice. And what we think they were doing was testing the gold to see if it was counterfeit. But indeed, they, with a big gold bar, they would break it into equal pieces. And everyone shared equally in the pirate community, except for the captain, who was voted to get 2 shares, and perhaps the chief gunner, who would get 1.5 shares. But that was all decided by vote. Everyone else shared equally. And once a certain amount of treasure was accumulated, the pirates could break up and go their separate ways. But you couldn't leave the pirate band until that amount had been accumulated or until it was voted on that you could leave.
Barry Clifford, it was a real pleasure talking with you today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Barry Clifford's new book is The Lost Fleet. This is Fresh Air.